Hello and a very warm welcome to the Couch Experts tennis podcast show, Center Court. I'm Gautam and on today's show we preview the US Open, the hot favorites, dark horses, injuries, returning uncles and exiting dads. Joining me on the show today is our in-house expert Rajat Jain. Rajat, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Gautam, and a warm welcome to all our viewers here.
Yeah, the draws have been announced and we are hardly just a couple of days away from the beginning of the tournament and it should be an exciting tournament starting. We'll go ahead and start with the favorites and Rajat, you've during the course of this week, you've written a couple of articles wherein you picked your favorites on both the ladies and the gentlemen side. Let's start with the ladies. You have picked Serena Williams as your top favorite as a top favorite for the Open. The three-time champ is seeded 28, made a comeback in Wimbledon after almost say 11 months off due to an injury. She has won a couple of tournaments since. She will, in all likelihood, run into fourth seed Victoria Azarenka in the third round.
That would be one match where. You might expect to that to be a night match with the New York crowd pitching in with all their energy, being Serena being the local favorite and obviously such a huge star. So that was one thing which was very exciting as to where Serena Williams will land in the draw, because she is seeded so low, but obviously we know that. If there is a better favorite for the US Open, it has to be Serena. I mean, the way she demolished the second favorite, Maria Sharapova at Stanford, 6-3, 6-2, I think that was the scoreline. And it was just unbelievable. So it's hard to pick anybody other than Serena for the title. Maybe Sharapova can, if Sharapova can avoid Serena Williams, or if she gets upset early, then maybe Apova is the other favorite for the title, but it's hard to see beyond those two right now.
Yeah, well, let's also talk about Azarenka. I mean, she has given Serena quite a difficult run in Australian Open twice previously, and she's returning to New York after, you know, suffering from a concussion last year. She's seeded number 4, and going into the match per seeding, she's the favorite. And how do you see that game panning out?
The problem with Azarenka is that she is good in all departments, but she is not great in any single department. So maybe you can say that her return of serve is very good, but again, it's not her strength compared to, say, Sharapova or Serena. So she has a solid forehand, which does not break down. She has a solid backhand, which does not break down. Obviously, I don't think many of the women are great at the net, so that evens out with Azarenka too, but like Serena. So Serena has a very solid serve, and say Sharapova has got a lot of firepower from the back of the court. So the problem with Azarenka is that she'll get passed through most of the people most of the players very easily. But when it comes to a top player like Williams or Sharapova, then she struggles, and we have seen it in the recent past. So even though Azarenka is seeded higher, I don't see her stretching Serena Williams to the height. Maybe she can take a set, but in the end, I would feel a comfortable victory for Serena. Maybe a tight set, but that is all. So, yeah.
Outside of that, I mean, in the long run, we know that she's on quite a run. I think the 12-match winning streak and so on, but how do you see, she's been out for almost 11 months, I know that she's on a roll now, but will it ever impact that she's being out for a bit and she's probably not being stretched at all? We've actually seen her implode once before, you know, yelling at a linesman. Is that the only reason how you see her not winning the tournament, or how much of an impact will it have for not being playing top flight tennis for a year?
So Serena is one player, probably the only player apart from Venus Williams on grass, who can just turn up after a month long or two month long or 6 month long sabbatical and just blow away the opposition. So if you remember in 2007, Serena was coming after an injury and she was seeded 81, I think, and then she just went on to the final and demolished Sharapova just like anything. So she is not new to this. She has already done that before, and given the way, given her recent victories, she's proven that she's back and she's very motivated. So one thing to know is that Clijsters won the tournament the last 2 years at US Open, and Serena loves playing in New York. She loves the energy here, she loves the excitement here, and she must be doubly motivated to perform well here in her home slam.
Yeah, you did mention also that Clijsters has pulled out of the tournament with an abdominal strain, which we'll come to Sharapova that you were talking about. She's come out of another shoulder injury. She's been far more consistent and was expected to win Wimbledon. She lost to Kvitova. But you see her still struggling with her serve, and how much of an impact you think the shoulder and her serving will have in a quest to win her second US Open.
I think for Sharapova now it rests only on her serve. If you saw her play at Cincinnati and Montreal, then her return of serve has taken unprecedented levels. I mean, she can the second serve of women are generally weaker compared to men, and she just blasts away the second serves like anything. So in the third set against Jankovic, she was hitting some crazy return winners, or she just dominated any second serve that Jankovic was putting in. So even though her serve is a problem, but her return is so damn good that she can very well make up for it. But again, it the her she cannot rely on the return of serve alone when she'll play top players like if Kvitova is again on a dream run, or Serena Williams, or maybe Kim Clijsters, who is not available right now, but yeah, her serve is definitely an issue. Maybe not against lesser-known players, so Sharapova would feel comfortable at least reaching the semis or so. But after that, she'll have to get her double faults in place.
Interesting that you brought Petra Kvitova here. She's expected Sharapova, that is expected to run into Kvitova in the quarterfinals, I think. Now let's also look at Petra Kvitova, a 21-year-old Czech player, lefty with a crippling serve that troubles opponent. We saw that in Wimbledon. She's had a dry run post Wimbledon. But a lot of people think that she is not somebody who is just a one slam winner. She is expected, to at least play well at the Open this time. How do you see her chances?
So the good thing about Kvitova is she has got a lot of variety. So she has probably the best slice backhand in the women's tour. She can hit some crazy slices which may dip and spin and turn and whatnot. So she has got a lot of variety on her ground strokes, and like her serve. So just like Serena, she has got a lot of variety on serves. I mean, it's just not about power. She can slip the serve off wide, and then she'll approach the net and finish the shot. And she's one player who actually volleys very well. So if you have gone to YouTube and search for some highlight reels of Kvitova, you'll see that she has hit some crazy volley winners as well. So she has definitely got the game and the variety to remain at the top. But the trend I've seen with Kvitova is that she's bipolar. I mean, she's either at the North Pole crushing everybody crazily, or she suddenly goes to the South Pole where nothing seems to work for her, and where even the simplest of forehands will go away 2 or 3 feet outside the baseline. So this fortunately didn't happen for her during Wimbledon, and she was just on song. And we just saw we saw how if she's on song, what she can do. So yeah, it's a bit of a 50-50 with her. Let's say not 50-50, but 80-20 with her. So players like Serena Williams, if they are not playing well or struggling for a set or two, then they can find enough motivation and suddenly find her game to come on top. But so far, we have not seen that from Kvitova. Looking at her draw, She'll probably play Yanina Wickmayer in fourth round, which might in third round, pardon me, which might be a little tricky, but I don't see her losing that. Or otherwise, her draw looks pretty straightforward till the quarters, where she's supposed to meet Sharapova. So if that happens, if both stay true to a seeds, we may have a terrific night match in the New York under the New York lights.
Yeah, no, she sounds more like the Pakistan cricket team, doesn't she? I mean, extremely good one day, extremely bad the other day. That kind of a thing. Let's look at the Asian, big Asian hope, Lina of China. Finalist in Melbourne, champion in Paris, and a good run in London. But you did mention also in your prediction that she's hardly done anything outside of these majors. How do you see her going in New York?
So yeah, Lina is a bit of character, if we may say like that. So she reached the finals of the Australian Open, and then it was supposed that she'll turn new grounds, and suddenly she lost five straight matches without winning a single one. And then come the French Open, she just went past the whole draw and beat the defending champion, who was also the sentimental favorite for Roland Garros. And then suddenly after that, she loses in the second round at Wimbledon. Obviously, she lost to a very good player in Lisicki, but still, it was not a match which we thought she should have lost. So it's a bit of a give and take with Lina. We never know what may happen. She may lose to the dumbest of players, and she may beat even the great ones. So if we look at the draw, she may play Suarez Navarro in the second round, which might get a little tricky because Navarro has a good single-handed backhand and she hits very flat, so it may be very helpful in the new in the fast courts of US Open.
US Open, yeah.
But otherwise, she may face Petkovic in fourth round, so that may be a good match to watch. So yeah, but ultimately Petkovic has been pretty consistent. She's another rising star in the women's tour. So in the last year, she has gone from, I think, top 20 to top 10 now, and she'll probably finish even higher if she performs decently post US Open. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting draw here with Lina and Petkovic in the fourth round, and maybe they may meet Wozniacki in the quarters, who knows.
Yeah, now let's look at world number one, Caroline Wozniacki, and also compare with somebody like who's a former champion in Venus Williams. One is world number one, the other is unseeded. One is coming out of, having lost to world number 70 in Cincinnati and, has now issues with her dad. The other is somebody who's on the exact other half as Serena Williams, and if she brings her A game in, she could actually end up meeting somebody like Serena in the finals. How do you see these two people faring in the Open?
Yeah, I mean, look, so Wozniacki is number one seed, Venus Williams is unseeded, and if they both happen to meet in a match, I'll still give the edge to Venus Williams, no matter how bad she has performed over the years, over the year, or how good Wozniacki has performed. So Venus Williams, again, she's got a nasty serve, and she has got good firepower on both her backhand and her forehand. So New York is the ideal place for Venus Williams, apart from grass. And it is evident as she has won her only two majors outside Wimbledon at New York. So looking at Venus Williams's draw, she'll probably face Sabine Lisicki in the second round. And I'd expect that to be a
Yeah,
blockbuster
absolutely.
battle of booming serves.
Yeah.
So that will be pretty interesting to watch if that comes to shape. So yeah, and looking at it, top players being unseeded actually opens up quite interesting combinations early in the and they may light up the early part of the slam, which is usually the duller of the two weeks. So yeah, it's good that some people are unseeded and some better players are unseeded.
I mean, before we move to some of the other dangerous floaters, let me just get back to you on Wozniacki for a little bit. I mean, she's going through a phase wherein she's the top player in the world, just doing enough to hold on to the rankings and not winning any slams. And that eventually seems to be playing in her mind, and that's more or less disintegrating her game. We saw that happen with Safina for a while.
So, I'll give her credit where it's due. So she's trying to change herself, and there was a lot of criticism that they should fire. I mean, she should change her coach, from, and she should get out of her dad's shadow. And she seems to be doing that. So right now it'll be a tough time for her because. She has recently changed coaches, and we know how desperately she relies she relies on advices from her dad during matches. So just to inform the viewers, on-court coaching is allowed during the women's tour outside the Grand Slams. So and Wozniacki has been helped tremendously from her dad during matches. So. By the way, another important no thing to note that Wozniacki is no longer the top player in the race rankings for this year. So Sharapova has already overtaken her, and Kvitova is not far behind, only I think 500 or 600 points behind Wozniacki in the race rankings for this year. So if Wozniacki doesn't perform during the US Open, then this might be the last year, the final year when she ends up
As the
as
one
being
number
the
one.
number five. Yeah, which may be a blessing in disguise for her too. Who knows? So let's have a look at Wozniacki's quarter. She may face Vesnina in the second round, who may be a tricky opponent. But otherwise, she may face Hantuchová in I think the fourth round in fourth round. So Hantuchová has already defeated her at Wimbledon and. Hantuchová is one player who can really trouble Wozniacki because of her flat strokes and the fact that she takes the ball so early. So actually in the fourth round she also faces some so she may face some tricky opponent like Kuznetsova, who is another tricky opponent for Wozniacki simply because she fires off both wings and she takes the ball early. So yeah. It is difficult to see Wozniacki marching through semis right now, but if she goes through the second week, that is the fourth round or better, it might be a good tournament for her.
Yeah, interesting that you brought up names like Petkovic, and we also have people. You did mention about Sabine Lisicki taking on Venus Williams potentially in the second round, but you also have other people. Svetlana Kuznetsova, who was a previous champion at the U.S. Open, Anna Ivanovic, Sibulkova. Who are the dark horses that we can probably get to see? Probably. Making a surprising deep run into the tournament.
I would love to see Anna Ivanovic go deep in the draw because her style of play is something that I like a lot. So she plays flat, she plays hard, and she always looks to attack. And she has probably the best inside out forehand in the women's tour if she gets it going. So her game is something that I really love to watch, and it would be great if she can go deep into the draw. But it's hard to see with Ivanovic. She may be brilliant one day, abysmal the other. So she's still struggling with her consistency, especially on her serve. So Ivanovic is definitely one. Sibulkova is one other who has reached to a couple of major semis in the past 2 3 years, and who defeated Wozniacki actually during the French Open. So Wozniacki, Sibulkova, Petkovic is somebody who's fast rising, and not to forget Samantha Stosur, who also serves big and hits hard. So Samantha Stosur has not done anything since the last French Open, and she may be probably itching to make her mark again.
Yeah, let's look at some of the potential crackerjack matchups in the first week of the US Open on the women's side. You did mention that, that is probably the one thing to look forward to in the first week of the tournament. We did speak about Venus Williams and Sabine Lisicki, and we did also speak about a couple of the other games. Which of these games that you think on the women's side that we need to look forward to?
So for us Indian fans, there is also a game between Sania Mirza and Shahar Pir, the Israeli Shahar Pir, in the very first round. So that may be a game to look forward for us Indian fans. Otherwise, so we have Azarenka and Dulko supposedly meeting in the second round, which might be interesting to watch. Then early on in the tournament, we'll have say Ivanovic and Jankovic. Potentially in the third round, or let's say if we go down the draw, we might face say let's go actually quarter by quarter. So in the first quarter, if we look at it, I don't see any interesting matchups early on in during the weeks. Maybe Petkovic and Kuznetsova, sorry, they are actually in different halves. So Petkovic and Lina fourth round might be something good to watch, and similarly Wozniacki and Kuznetsova maybe another one. In the third quarter, if we see we may have Kvitova and Janina Wickmeyer in the third round, or let's say we have American Melanie Udan, who has been struggling since 2009. So
Yeah.
she may face Rezai or Panetta, which might be a good contest if she manages to get past the first round. So, and if she actually manages to win two matches, then Maria Sharapova may get a chance to avenge her defeat to Udan in 2009. So yeah, that is one other interesting matchup. Otherwise, in fourth round, you have lots of dangerous floaters like Nadia Petrova, Samantha Stosur, Sibylkova. Venus Williams is actually a floater right now. Sabine Lisicki. So fourth quarter is, I think, the one where you might find the most interesting matchups. Marion Bartoli. So lots of good players to watch in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, in any case, I mean, I think the first 2 days there will be a lot of people, at least there will be a lot of media attention given to the kind of fashion statements these top ladies will make. I think in any
Yeah.
case, there will be a lot of things that will happen there. Let's move on to the men now. I mean, it's hard these days to start any conversation on men's tennis than not talk about Djokovic. He's taken his
Djokovic,
game to another level, and you put him as your top favorite.
yeah.
He's had a great year. He's also now suffering from an injury after pulling out of the finals at Cincinnati with a shoulder injury. Do you really think there is anybody out there who can stop him? How do you see this US Open panning out for Djokovic?
First of all, look at the draw. Djokovic has got a pretty straightforward draw, at least till the semis, where after which he's supposed to meet Federer. So he plays a qualifier in the opening round, and then again two unseeded, he may play in the second round an unseeded player again. In the third round, he may potentially face Nikolai Davydenko, whom he has beaten a lot of
Yeah,
times in the
sure.
past. But in the fourth round, he may face a tricky opponent in Alexander Dolgopolov. So if you remember, Dolgopolov beat Robin Soderling in the Australian Open pretty handily. So if Dolgopolov finds his range, then he may be someone who can trouble Djokovic, because he'll not give rhythm to Novak, which he so loves. So Dolgopolov is a streaky player who likes to play with the angles, change the pace a lot, take the ball early, suddenly play passive during rallies, and suddenly hit a winner out of nowhere. So he's similar to say Bernard Tomic, who again relies on changes in pace and suddenly hitting winner out of nowhere or so. So Dolgopolov is somebody, if he manages to reach the fourth round, may trouble Novak Djokovic. But in the quarters again, he may face say Gael Monfils or Tomas Berdych, or let's say Janko Tipsarevic. So so he never has faced trouble with these players. I know I know Monfils stretched him to 2-3 sets in
Yes.
Cincinnati, but he was really very mentally tired, and he also had the problem with the shoulder, so which actually contributed to this. But in a best of five match, it is difficult that anybody in his quarter may take 3 sets out of him. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you brought up the shoulder injury, and I think that is going to be the key for him here, isn't it? Like, it's a shoulder inflammation, is what they say. From whatever I know of these information, is that it's more a dead arm. So with rest, he has had since retiring from the finals. He would have had several rub downs, and with the advancement in medical science, it should be all right. But they tend to reappear, don't they? Maybe 1 week into the tournament, say, he's end up playing somebody who's got good ball striking skills. He can lock him in long rallies and put pressure on his serve. Not only does it put pressure on his serve, but also onto his high forehand. That's where I see the trouble is. So,
Exactly. And
how
even
do
the
you?
backhand when he takes high, so he actually uses a lot of his right hand when he hits those crazy cross court backhands. So that may put some strain on his shoulder. But again, we don't know what the extent of his injury is. So he has kept a good job of keeping it away from the media. So I would probably hope and assume that his shoulder will turn out to be fine at least during the first week or so. And Grand Slams are actually good in this sense, because they have rests between each matches. So let's hope that Djokovic's shoulder will be fine, and there is no doubt that he'll be recharged mentally again after the letdown in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple of other points with Djokovic before we move on to Rafael Nadal. It was only last year wherein he lost his finals to Nadal in 4 sets, but I would think that his biggest turnaround came in the semifinals against Roger Federer. He was 2 match points down, he came down from the brink. It's turned around his year, and we all have spoken about his new diet and whatnot. Do you think that would have probably been the turning point for him for him to have had the kind of run that he has had this year?
Definitely. I always point out two instances during last year. One was, as you pointed out, the semifinals against Federer, where after 2 match points he suddenly started ripping off his forehands and turned the match and eventually won it. And the second one was where he won both of his Davis Cup runners during the finals and led his team to the victory. Led his country to their maiden Davis Cup title. So actually, a lot of credit was given to Viktor Troicki, who won the final match. But it was actually Djokovic who kept them alive during both the
Exactly.
occasions when they lost the preceding match. So Djokovic was actually the one who equalized the score after Serbia went behind in the Davis Cup tie. And it was both these instances which gave Djokovic the mental belief that, yeah, he is there to stay.
I mean, the Davis Cup actually brings me to my next point on Djokovic. I mean, look at the kind of the amount of tennis that he's been playing. He's helped Serbia win their first Davis Cup. I know that he didn't play in the Davis Cup time when India went there, but there is a school of thought going around saying that you look at the men that have played through the year, and they want to say point out that Djokovic has won just about everything that he has played, and therefore has played most tennis and also is most vulnerable physically and mentally. We did see signs of mental flatness when he played in Cincinnati, right? You don't know what would have happened, say, in the semifinals if Berdych didn't retire after being 5-3 up. Do you think the amount of tennis he's played will be a factor sometime during the next 2 weeks?
So actually, his his closest rival, that is Rafael Nadal, has played equal number of matches, maybe one or two less. But if you see, Nadal has played all the matches. He played Australian Open, then Indian Wells, Miami. So in fact, he played Monte Carlo, which Djokovic skipped. So he even has Monte Carlo, Barcelona, Rome, Madrid, French Open. Then he even played in Queens, where Djokovic skipped the Wimbledon tune-up tournament at Halle. So actually, Nadal has played even more tennis than Djokovic, even though he has won lesser matches. So his nearest closest rival is also meant, and he is even more mentally down right now because of these five losses to Djokovic. So I don't think the amount of tennis that he has played should affect him, at least in the US Open. Maybe post US Open, Djokovic will completely go flat after losing all the motivation from the slams. But in the Open, he should be pretty motivated to, at least mentally, to compete and try to win his third major of the year. It is Nadal, whom I'm worried for, because of all these losses and the really subpar performance during the tune-up Masters.
Yeah, we'll talk about Nadal. I mean, it's heartbreaking that you said that it's difficult for Nadal. I expect, I mean, any slam, I always hope that he ends up winning it. But it's been a difficult year, hasn't it, for him? I mean, especially knowing the kind of year that he had in 2010 and coming into 2011, five straight losses in finals to Djokovic.
Yeah, and I mean, if Djokovic was not present, then Nadal could have had an even better year than 2010, because I can't see any play the way he was playing before he met Djokovic. It was at another level, and Djokovic just brought him down to two or three grades down. So yeah, it has been a tough year for Nadal.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things that I noticed here is that, there have been people that have pointed out to not just his mental conditioning or his state of mind. I mean, Nadal himself agreed to it in a press conference post the Wimbledon final that now Djokovic is playing in his head. How much of an impact that will have, say, to the rest of the tournament? I mean, he is not going to face Djokovic before the finals, but is that an issue in terms of his preparation, in terms of getting into the finals?
It's difficult to say right now. So in case of Federer and Nadal, say 2 years back or so, when Nadal had totally got into Federer's head, so we didn't see much of an impact in Federer's game before he met Nadal in the final. So he was still cruising past opponents, having maybe a difficult match or two along the way, but mostly his journey was usually smooth before the eventual decline started in 2010. So in case of Nadal, I've seen that in French Open he was really horrible. So he had a very difficult first round match with Isner, and then also he struggled to find his rhythm on his favorite surface. But in Wimbledon, I thought he was in terrific form till the finals. So he played a very, very good match against Murray to defeat him in straight sets. Even before he played a very good match with in the quarters. I don't remember whom he played exactly, but he showed he was looking in very good form during Wimbledon, and I honestly thought that he had a very good chance against Djokovic, because Djokovic was looking actually a little rusty in Wimbledon. So it's hard to say how it will affect him in the US Open, because his form has really not not he's really not looked like a 10 slam winner or a world number two during these Masters tune-up events. So if you noticed his match against Verdasco, he committed close to 50 unforced errors, which is really unheard of
Unheard
from
of,
Nadal.
yeah. But you also know that the lead up to the US Open is where he's traditionally not done well. But I would like to point out a couple of things. I saw his ball striking to be slightly late, and people have started pointing out that his racket preparation while returning the racket is too low to the ground, which will probably mean that he's slightly late when he's playing his return of serve. And they are also saying that, you know, his Western forehand is making things difficult, with also him being late on the return of serve. There, as a result, it opens up his feet and he's not getting any body or shoulder into the into his return of serve. These are things that have started coming out. Is it all because he's not playing well, or do you seriously think that there is an issue with his ball striking skills now? And also now that Tony Nadal is back in the frame, do you think that'll sort things out?
So historically, Tony has never been Tony has never attended the North American Masters series. And we know that Nadal has never performed that well during that. So even last year he was not looking that good in the Masters series. But suddenly Tony came and he found his 130 miles per hour serve in the US Open. So but things were different last year. He had won three. He had swept away the clay season, and then he had also won Wimbledon. So losing the Masters was probably not a setback for him. This year, the confidence is he should be he's low on confidence right now, and you know he has struggled with some or the other physical issues throughout the year. It was a hamstring during Australian Open, then he had some trouble with the foot during Wimbledon, and now he had some finger injuries and some blisters on the feet. So he has struggled with problems throughout the later half of the season right now. If those problems go away, then all the technical deficiencies that you have talked about may suddenly go away again, and we may see the Nadal of 2010 US Open again. Who knows? But it all depends on his confidence right now.
Absolutely. I would. I mean, it's a strange thing, this confidence. The moment you start blasting a couple of winners from the back of the court, you tag a couple of points there and lead into a good couple of sets, and you're on a roll all of a sudden, and everything flies away.
Exactly, same with Djokovic. Like his game has, if you see the level of his strokes have not improved significantly from 2008 to 2010, 2011. I mean, definitely there is an improvement in all aspects of his game, but there is no sudden improvement in any single feature. It's just that he has become much more consistent in every wing, including the serve. So same as with Nadal, he needs to find that confidence to get back his consistency.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes easy to forget that he is a defending champion here. I mean, let's move on to
Okay.
Roger Federer. I mean, it's strange that we are talking of a name like Roger Federer after Djokovic and Rafael Nadal, but that's a reflection of the times. He's turned 30, he's not won a slam since the Australian Open in 2010. It's similar issues with Nadal, wherein people have started pointing out to all kinds of things. The people started blaming his one-handed backhand. People have started blaming his, heavy racket head as the reasons.
Yeah.
But you know, he's somebody who's owned New York. He's won five slams there in a row. He lost in the
And the
semifinals last
finals.
year. How
Yeah.
do you see this year panning out?
I've always believed that Federer is even better at New York than he is at Wimbledon. So Federer looks all or more graceful and beautiful to watch when he's on the green lawns of Wimbledon. But if you want to see his menacing best, then I've seen that he has played some of his most deadly matches in New York. So he loves the atmosphere there. He loves the crowd getting behind him, and he loves the fast surface where the ball skids off after it hits the court, and it bounces low, so it does not put pressure on his backhand. Unlike Wimbledon, so in Wimbledon also the ball bounces a little higher these days. So Federer definitely likes the conditions over here. It's a matter of motivation right now, I think. So he still has shown that he can play some terrific matches on a given day, like in 2010 against Söderling, when he just gave us a miraculous serving exhibition during the gusty winds, where Söderling was even unable to get a first serve in. So he still has the game inside him. It's just that it does not appear on a day-to-day basis like it used to do before.
I would think that, he's probably at the stage of his career when slams mean a lot more, and I know there's a lot of
Yeah.
criticism that, he turns up for Masters 500s and even 1000s, wherein he's just probably trying to go through the motions. And it's accused of all top players these days, and they say that in the days of Agassi, Sampras and Becker it was slightly different. But you got to understand that at this stage of his career, I think he'll be more than happy to win,
Yeah.
maybe bag one or more, two more slams. Do you think that he has
Yeah,
another
and we should
slam?
not forget, he's the only man to have beaten Djokovic this year in majors,
Exactly.
and he reached the French Open finals, took a set of Nadal at his best, and almost he was almost on the verge of winning the first set too. So it's not that his game has suddenly gone away.
Yeah, let's move on and discuss Andy Murray. I remember a couple of years ago, he was touted widely even by somebody like John McEnroe to break his slam duck at the US Open, but then it went all right for him. It's been a difficult year, a lot of early exits. Even now, leading up to this tournament, second round loss in Montreal, followed by a championship at Cincinnati. He somehow seems to be to bring extremes there, but I saw in Cincinnati that probably a steely resolve, and also he was calm. Do you think this will be the year wherein he might actually break his slam duck?
This is a very golden opportunity for Murray to break his slam dunk right now. So we know that Federer and Nadal both are struggling with confidence and consistency. So those two are already gone. Del Potro is still not back to his very best. So he may avoid the Del Potro threat as well. Or even if he meets Del Potro during the fourth round, which he's supposed to meet, it might not be that difficult for him. And more importantly for him, we don't know the condition about Djokovic. So I still have Djokovic as the favorite for this tournament this year. But who knows? He may be mentally burnt as it appeared in Cincinnati, or he may ha or his shoulder trouble may turn out suddenly after playing say 4 or 5 night matches. So Andy Murray should really look at this opportunity to break through in the majors.
I would think probably if at all a surprise comes to this year, I expect it to come from Andy Murray. Outside of the top four, would you see any of the others making a run for it? I know we let's also probably look at the American interest here. Marty Fish has had a great year. Andy Murray is sorry, Andy Roddick is no longer the force he was, and I'm not too sure. I think the last I know is that he was playing in Winston-Salem. I don't know what happened there. How do
He
you
lost
see?
John is there.
Okay, how do you see say it panning out for the Americans in the men's section?
So Americans, we have Ryan Harrison, who had some good runs during the US Open series. Marty Fish obviously is in the form of his life, and he's deservedly the top American player right now. So he is in Djokovic's half right now. He's in Djokovic's half this time, and in Federer's quarter. So given that Federer is a little vulnerable here, and he might actually face Fish might face Tsonga early during the week. We actually have a pretty interesting matchups on our hand. So if Fish will fancy his chances against Tsonga, who is a little inconsistent and had some arm injury after Montreal, and he may even fancy him against Federer. Who knows? The crowd getting behind Marty and Federer struggling with confidence, he may stage an upset.
Let's look at probably, I mean, you did bring out names like Gael Monfils here. We did speak a little while about Del Potro being you must remember that he's a champion here as well. I mean, he was a champion in 2009. Tsonga has had some sort of a revival. A little while back we spoke about Dolgopolov as well. I mean, how many of these people do you really think actually can surprise the big four at all, if at all? And probably is, I mean, is there a realistic chance that we'll probably see one of them in the
Right.
semis
So
semifinals?
So the issue with all these guys is that, leaving apart Del Potro, is that they can beat any of the top guys on any given day. Monfils has beaten Federer before in Paris, and Berdych has now had so many wins over Federer. So Tsonga has beaten Federer 3 times in a row now. So all these guys are capable of beating any of the top four on any given day. But the problem with these guys is that they should actually reach the semis or the quarters to face those guys, and they are not consistent enough to reach the quarters or the semis on a consistent basis. So while say a Dolgopolov may beat a Federer or a Nadal someday, but he should first actually win 3 or 4 matches in order to face them, which I don't see happening. And that is why it is very hard to see anybody apart from top four winning the majors. Maybe Del Potro with a very outside chance, but really nobody apart from these 5 players.
Rajat, your pick for say interesting matchups on the men's side in the first week?
In the first quarter, we have a pretty interesting matchup between Sergei Stakhovsky and Richard Gasquet. So Stakhovsky is a pretty interesting all-court player who likes to do all type of things on court, and we know how talented Gasquet is. So this is one matchup which I'm really looking forward to. Then up the quarter, Davidenko and Djokovic potentially may meet in the third round, which might be interesting. And going down the quarter, we may have Gasquet and Dolgopolov in the third round, which should be good to watch. Going down the quarter, we have a very, very good matchup between the upcoming player Grigor Dimitrov and Gael Monfils. So if you remember, Dimitrov battled really hard against Jo Wilfried Tsonga at Wimbledon, and that was a really, really great exhibition of grass court tennis by both of the players. So if Dimitrov may continue his upswing, then we may have a very entertaining matchup between two really interesting players: Monfils, who likes to work up with the crowd, who's always an entertainer, and Dimitrov with his beautiful exhibition of ground strokes. Moving on to the second quarter, we may fa we, Federer may face a tricky matchup with Thomas Bellucci in the second round, who actually gave Djokovic a scare in Madrid, if I'm not wrong. And then you have the American Ryan Harrison facing Marin Cilic, who has faced a disappointment this year. So that will be a very good first round to watch. Then again, you may have Bernard Tomic and Marin Cilic in the second round, and again Federer and Bernard Tomic in the third round. So a lot of interesting matchup to look forward to in the second quarter. You may actually face Kevin Anderson and Michael Laudra, which will be a good serve and volley player against big server. So you may have Mardy Fish and Michael Laudra in the third round. Who knows? It might be a good encounter as well. Moving on in the third quarter, you have Robin Soderling and Alex Bogomolov. So Bogomolov has had a pretty good year this far. He has come back into the top 50 and defeated Andy Murray in Indian Wells. So Soderling has a tricky matchup early during the Open, and if he does survive that, then he may face Bagdadis or John Isner, who both are really good players in the third round. And then again, Juan Martin Del Potro is also in the same round. He may face Gilles Simon in the third round. So that will be an interesting matchup to look forward to. For the Indian fans, you have Somdev Devarman facing Andy Murray. So Murray actually doesn't like players like Devarman because they hardly give them any pace to work with. So Murray might be in early trouble with Devarman, and as an Indian fan, we may hope that that may actually turn out to be true. In the fourth quarter, there are not many interesting matchups apart from Mikhail Yuzhny and Ernest Gulbis in the first round. So that may be that actually should be very entertaining. Gulbis, we know, is a very temperamental player. He may just turn up and fire out forehands and backhands and first serves on one day, and then the other day he may just leave his brain in the locker room and fail to show any resistance. So if the real Gulbis actually. If the virtual Gulbis turns out to play against Yuzhny, that may be an interesting encounter. And for people of Isner Mahu fame, Nicolas Mahu may potentially face Nadal in the second round. So that probably wraps up for the interesting matchups.
What's also interesting is the impact that Hurricane Irene is going to have. There are news that it's already hit the East Coast, and South Carolina and North Carolina are being affected, and there's evacuation in place already. How do you see it impacting the tournament? Should it also hit New York?
Right now, the predictions are that after Sunday there should be actually no rains in New York, but we don't know with these hurricanes and all. So actually, for the last 3 years, U.S. Open has the finals of the U.S. Open has been shifted to had to be shifted to Monday for due to the rains, and that actually led to a lot of loss in revenue and viewership. So if that happens, the hurricane happens, who knows, the US Open will have the finals will have to shift it a day again, which will not be a good news for the fans.
Okay, fine then. I think let's probably come back again in the middle of the next week to see how the first week has panned out, and look ahead into the next into the second week of the tournament. Before we wrap, would you want to predict your two winners on the men's and women's side?
So in women's, it's Serena Williams by a huge margin. I don't see anybody apart from Maria Sharapova giving her some trouble, but it should be Serena all the way. On the men's side, I'll just be a little stupid and go against the notion of picking Djokovic. I think Djokovic is still the favorite, but I see Andy Murray finally winning his first slam in New York.
Yeah, I would probably side with you on Serena Williams. I definitely think it is her slam to lose, and the only way she would probably lose is by imploding and not somebody beating her. And on the men's side, yeah, I mean it's I also think that it could be finally the year and where Andy Murray could win his first slam, but I would stick go by my heart and say it's going to be Rafael Nadal. I'll be slightly stupid
Okay,
here and then
that
go
would
with
be
my
great.
favorite. Yeah, fine then.
Yeah.
Then thanks a lot, buddy. Thanks a lot for joining
Always listen
us.
to your house.
Yeah, thanks a lot for joining, and I'll see you next week again.
Okay, thank you.